Hey, this is Cole Cabana, and you're listening to the Iron Claw Podcast with Marshall, Ross, and the D-Man. All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Iron Claw Cast. We are now on episode 12. I can't believe it's been 12, but it has been 12. And with me, as always, are the two guests of honor, Ross and Marshall Von Erich. Gentlemen, greetings from my camper.
Greetings. What's up, D-Money? So we are super, super thrilled about this show. I want to thank everybody for all the outpouring of love and support. And thank you for being patient during our little vacation. We had to take a little Mother's Day break. We took the girls down to a hotel for the week. It was pretty nice. Weekend. But the reason we're so excited about this show, this is a guy we have a lot of history with. This guest is a lot of history with. When we were first cutting our teeth in wrestling in 2012, we were, you know, on this bus, homesick. We found out some Americans were going to go on the next tour with us, and Colt Cabana being one of them. And, you know, we'd right there, this guy's hilarious. He kind of just did it differently than any other wrestler. He had a podcast. He was serious about his merchandise, and he was looking at the bigger picture other than, you know, just being a good wrestler and promos, which is important, but he was looking at all aspects in case something ever happened to his body or if he got injured. It was really cool to see somebody protect himself.
Yeah, smart, thinks ahead. And when we were on tour in Japan and he came, it was, you know, we hadn't been around English speaking people for a while. We were the only gaijin on the tour at the time. And he, you know, it sounds dumb. He was literally like a ray of light when he came, because he's always joking around, you know, has funny stuff to say.
Yeah, it was a great experience for us. And I almost felt like we were in Japan so long that my English got bad. When we were talking to other Americans, we'd use our hands.
Broken English. Yeah, we speak broken English even to each other. And I was like, why are we doing this? Even after we got home.
When you're in a foreign country, and I've traveled around the world, and it is, when you meet somebody from your, even if they're just from the United States, a different state, you know, and you meet them and you're in a far foreign country, you kind of start automatically feeling a kinship. And if they've got a personality or something, I could totally see after talking to Colt how great it would be for you guys to just inject that, oh my gosh, we got something, you know, positive, less homesick here.
But we felt, at the time, we felt so far away from home. We were in a tiny little country town in Japan, and this is the last place you'd think you'd see an American. And there's been times we've been like more populated, like Osaka, Tokyo, or whatever, and you know, you'd see an American, you walk up to him like, hey, what's up, man? And they're kind of just like, they've only been there like 3 days, and they're like, hi, you know, like,
man, why are you talking to me for?
I'm like, I've been here for 60 days and I haven't seen another English speaking person except for my brother.
I love you, man, I love you.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, we're so excited for this show. I hope you guys enjoy it. It's gonna be a whole lot of fun.
Well, Colt Cabana is coming up next. We have a quick commercial, and we'll be right back with Colt right here on the Iron Claw Cast. Don't go away.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, DJ D-Man here. If you are needing a DJ for your next party or event, you're in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, give me a call at 817-233-5646, and I'll come put the boom in your room just like I'm doing tonight. Once again, that's DJ D-Man, 817-233-5646.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Iron Claw Cast, and we are here with our special guest, Colt Cabana. Colt, thank you for joining us, and where are you joining us from, sir?
Well, hi, Dennis. I'm here in Chicago, Illinois, but I'm very excited. No offense to you, Dennis, but I'm very excited to talk with Marshall and Ross.
I get that all the time. Don't worry about it. Hey, I have to ask first off, though, are you a Bears fan?
I'm a casual sports fan. If you know, I like the Chicago teams. If anything, I support the most the Chicago Cubs.
Okay, well, you have to either be a Cubs or a White Sox fan. You know, you can't be both, right?
You do know I live in Chicago, and I'm well aware.
Well, my dad lives in Chicago, and he's not aware because he's been a Cubs fan. But when the White Sox won the championship a few years back, he was a big White Sox fan. So I was like, you can't do that, Dad.
Well, disown your father then.
Yeah. Hey, how long you lived in Chicago your whole life?
Yeah, let's see. I mean, I grew up in the suburbs of Chicago, and then I went to college and in Kalamazoo, Michigan, Western Michigan University. So I would go there for 4 years. Then I moved back in with my parents after I graduated so I could be a full-time wrestler and a teaching assistant. And then I continued to live in the suburbs. Then I moved to Chicago proper, the city, when I was about 23 or 24. Then I moved to England for a summer to wrestle, moved back home. And then when I got signed to WWE, they moved me out to Louisville, Kentucky for a year, and then Tampa, Florida for a year. And then once I was fired, I literally got right in my car and drove right back to Chicago because that is home, which is easy for me. Like, not that I feel bad for you guys, because who's going to feel bad for anyone who lives in Hawaii? But when I lived in Chicago, it's just like, oh, like I can go to any show. It's, you know, it's so close to everything,
right?
The center of America. Whereas if you guys want to go anywhere, it's a hole to do, right?
No, yeah, exactly. That's why we're thinking like Chicago would be like one of the best places to live as an independent wrestler.
Very central out there, definitely.
But, yeah, man. And all the, you know, right, all the flight, like I'm like a god on United Airlines, so
yeah.
Oh, every time you walk in,
yeah. When you know, it's like I've flown so much, but when they ever like slip a piece of paper to me saying like, you know, or give me an extra like snack box, I'm like, yeah, I deserve this.
Yeah,
snack
box.
You kind of glance back at everybody else. You guys,
Colt, you fly so much that you don't realize that an airplane has more than four rows in it, do you?
Right. I'm always up front, baby. I'm always up front. Yeah, I definitely. I'm always looking at people and I'm like, you're all less than me.
you got to let them know that, or, you know, it's
otherwise, you know, they think that they're, you know, equal, cool. And that's not cool.
It's not cool. What was great was when, you know, because I did it, I've been grateful to be flown as a wrestler from a very kind of young age. After, I don't know, I started when I was 18, and after paying my dues, you know, constantly at like 21, I started getting flown to shows. And so when I was 25 and still poor as an independent wrestler, but for some reason, legendary status on the airplane,
yeah,
I would be bumped up to first class with all of these businessmen. And then just me in like a cut off dirty sweatshirt, you know? Yeah. And I took a lot of pride in looking like the scummiest person in first class. I always loved it. Always loved it.
It leaves everybody with a question like, what does he do? How's he up here with him?
And I let him. And I'm well aware they're asking those questions, and I loved it.
No, hey,
it does happen at the airport.
You said you were a teacher's assistant. How long did you do that?
Yeah. Uh-oh. Did we lose our friends?
Well, they'll be back. Yeah, okay. There they are. We're back. Marshall has to show his face every so often to make sure, you know.
Yeah, so, but I was going to say, so you were a teacher's assistant. How long did you do that? Was it like an actual teacher?
So I graduated college with a degree in business administration and marketing. But I knew when I graduated college, I still only wanted to be a wrestler. And I was very active on the wrestling scene. In college, I would take classes during the week, and then I would drive all over the country. And sometimes at that point, even fly all over the country. So I wanted to continue wrestling. I didn't want to take a job that would take away from me living and fulfilling my life as a pro wrestler. So I had worked as a camp counselor for like 10 years in the Deerfield Park District system during the summers. It was a great job. It was a great summer job when you were home from college or whatever it was, because, you know, it's you're playing with kids, you're able to go make shows at night, you're able to go to practice at night and work out, and you're also, you can have your shirt off and get a good tan for wrestling while you're swimming and everything. So a lot of my friends, that's something they would also do. They would go from camp counselor to becoming teaching assistants, where you could work in the school system with the kids again. It's an easy job. It's 8 to 3. I didn't need to have a teaching degree, but a college education was nice. And then, you know, I could take off on the weekends and wrestle. So it was the perfect job for me. I did that for 2 years. I worked one-on-one with a kid with Down syndrome. And then I would also work with kids with special needs in middle school. And they were all like, this isn't a word. I've learned this since. So I please don't take offense. I know at the point they were called high functioning, but I know that's not, they've asked not to use that term anymore. But they were kids that were just very, very capable. So it was so fun to be around the special needs kids. There was so much energy and so much love. And I really enjoyed doing it, but it just got to the point where I was working Monday through Friday, 8 through 3. And then at that point I was also then flying to London for the weekend or going to Puerto Rico. And it got to the point where I was able to make enough money as a wrestler. And by enough money, I mean barely $10,000 a year, where I said I could do this full time as a pro wrestler. So, I put a stop to that after 2 years, but I did really enjoy it. And I did say to myself, like, I was going to go full forward with wrestling. And I said to myself, okay, when I'm 30 and if this thing is nothing, I'm going to go back, get my teaching degree and probably become a gym teacher or something like that to be able to work with kids again.
Man. So cool. When did we meet you? We met you 2012. How old were you then? Because it seemed like you were pretty established by then. The Bravado brothers were putting you over.
Yeah, but before you came, your reputation preceded you. There's this guy is this and that, and so
I'm talking about your podcast, and we were excited to meet you. But at that time, we'd been in Japan for about 2 or 3 months. We were homesick, didn't know that much about the history of Japanese wrestling. We learned a lot while we were there, and so it was having you was kind of cool because you were like a. You spoke English, first of all. That was awesome.
Right.
Yeah, but we actually have a funny story. The day we started really liking you is I believe we all went to like dinner, me, you, Ross, the Bravados. Maybe Ricky was there.
Maybe
Ricky was there. I think we went to the, I always get the name wrong.
We split the check and I overreact because I'm stuck with like an extra like 200 yen, which is like $2 or something. You know, and I, being so immature at the time, I'm like making a big deal out of it. We're in the elevator. I'm all butthurt, you know, and you're just like, man, I'll give you the money. Like, what, you know, what are you making a big deal out of? And then the next day you come out with an olive branch and you give me a coffee or something. Yeah. And I remember from that point on, I was like, man, he totally outclassed me.
And you were a big deal. The fact that you even remembered, it was pretty true.
I don't even know if you remember that, but after that, I was like, man, that is that's the kind of guy I want to be. Like,
Well, thanks.
Yeah, honestly. Yeah.
And also, like, I'm notoriously very cheap, you know, and frugal too. So to do that, I knew, like, it's funny because I'm frugal, but I'm generous, which is a weird combination. So, you know, I knew it was probably the right thing to do. When I was there, when I met you guys, if it was 2012, I was 32 years old, and 32, I'd been doing it for 13 years at that point. And I had been hired and fired by the WWE. I had essentially traveled the world quite a bit, you know, in my mid-20s before I got signed to WWE, I was doing almost every other month tours of England and Europe. And I'd been lucky enough to also go to Japan at that point for Zero Max, which was ran by Hashimoto originally. And then when he passed, kind of Otani and Masato Tanaka, they kind of took it over really as the top dogs over there. So I had luckily, you know, done a couple of tours of Japan, and I had a lot of confidence under my belt as a wrestler and performer. And Marufuji, I had learned, was like, when I got fired from WWE, he's like, can we get Cabana? Which meant so much to me that they were searching me out. I think when we met, I had already done a couple of tours for Noah. Is that correct?
Would you even know? No, I believe so. That it was the first.
There was already a picture of you on the calendar on the wall.
Yeah, okay.
It was one of our first tours, but yeah.
I had been established at that point, you know, not only 13 years, but a hard 13 years where I was doing it every single week, every single weekend, 200 days a year on the road or whatever it might have been. I really enjoyed my time. And I did think it was cool that you guys were over there. It's weird because it's mixed feelings, because like, I know how hard it is for you guys. They're probably expecting a lot out of you, but also you guys are probably, you know, in my head, living in Hawaii the whole time and now just plopped into this dojo, and everything sounds, the grass always sounds greener. So like, everything always sounds so romantic from the outside perspective of like,
they get
to go to Japan and be like pampered or not, or, you know, like tutored and learn, and you think it's great. But then when you're in it, like, it's just like, this is life, and life is us sitting, sleeping in a box.
Yeah.
And having to walk at a mile to the closest Walgreens equivalent or whatever. Right.
Lawson's. Yeah.
That's what's crazy is, the only guys that would give you any sympathy are the foreigners that have done it, you know, like yourself and stuff. And like you said, it looks like it on social media, we're living the life and all this, but yeah, we slept on cinder blocks with plywood on top of it, you know, and some sleeping bags. But it was definitely a culture shock, but it was good for us developing as young men. We got closer as brothers, you know. We realized that we were all we had. And there was times where we were, one of us wanted to quit or go home, but when I was weak, he was strong, vice versa. And so it was great for us. But yeah, I definitely know people that were, you know, that were thinking that we kind of had things handed to us. But the reason my dad sent us over there is so that people didn't think that, because we went over there, it was being third generation wrestlers. It was almost like, it felt like nobody liked us. The only guys that liked us were more Fuji at the beginning. And then it was pretty rough. It was pretty rough in the beginning, but then we started really enjoying it. It's like, man, we're in a different country. When we don't know if this is going to happen again.
And you do realize it's, you know, I've realized knowing another language is like a superpower.
Oh yeah.
Like if we only knew Japanese, if we could only speak to them the way we speak to each other. And sometimes our laziness, you know, it's to me, I chalk it up to straight laziness. I remember when I went to 01 and I bought the book, How to Learn Japanese. And then after a week, I was like, ugh, I can't do this anymore.
I know. Yeah. I bought Learning Japanese for Dummies. It was a little book and I read it for a week. But yeah, if you're an American that can speak Japanese, I feel like just that right there.
Yeah, their level of respect for you is just that much higher.
Yeah, and you can see if they're talking crap about you.
Yeah, you know what? That's the superpower, I feel.
Yeah.
To see if they're talking crap about you.
After having been, I've been to Japan twice, and I only know about two greetings in Japanese, but I found out it really helps me. It's a konnichiwa and doshashimante. And I've gotten by just fine on that with a big smile.
But imagine if you knew like 1,000 words, you'd be a hero.
Oh gosh, that'd be great.
Yeah, we'd be in training and it'd just be really quiet, nobody saying a word, and we're taking bumps, and I was like, man, I this is the beginning, so I was like, I hope my bumps are good. And they all whisper something in Japanese and everybody start laughing and staring, so I was just assuming, I like to think positive, I'm assuming the best, you know. But I don't think so.
That was a sick bump, man. Yeah, right? Yeah.
That guy can pull.
Yeah.
Colt, you're doing podcasts as well. So how are you liking that versus wrestling? Are you liking that every bit as much?
Well, it's pretty wild. Yeah. So I started a new podcast, and I invite everybody to please give it a listen. The first episode just came out. It's called Wrestling Anonymous, and I'm taking anonymous phone calls and phone messages from fans, and kind of I'm being the curator. I'm putting them all in one place, and it's really fun. I hope you go subscribe and listen. And I'm not saying this to you three specifically, I'm saying to the listeners, but
we're already subscribed.
Oh, thank you. Yeah,
there.
But when we met, you know, the podcast, the weekly podcast was my bit, so it wasn't just podcasting or wrestling, it was all part of the package. And so that was always scary going over to Japan, because when I was in America or whatever, I could go and I would always do my podcast in person. So it was always easy to get guests on the shows. So when I would go to Japan and do a, whatever it was, a 3-week tour or 4-week tour, I'd always be scared that I wouldn't be able to talk to some of the wrestlers. But, you know, it's kind of my motto is just like, it'll all work itself out. And so I would get a little stressed, but it always did work itself out. And I, you know, going back and looking, I'm doing some rearranging on my Patreon, and I'm looking and I'm uploading some of the new, I'm trying to upload some of the old shows onto different stuff. And I look back at some of the talks with some of the wrestlers I had with Pro Wrestling Noah. And, you know, there's a talk with Ricky Marvin, and I had talks with Shane and Mikey, and then, you know, like this, I don't know, the saddest. Were you guys around for Bison?
No, we were just after.
We were just after, yeah.
Yeah, and man, I'm so grateful that I had a podcast with Bison, and he passed a little bit after that, but to be able to get his story out there, and that it will live forever, and anyone could listen to it, and that's why I'm doing some rearranging right now. They're my old shows are on my Patreon, but I want to put them back for free, just so anyone can listen to. I feel a little bit of guilt for if anyone wants to learn about Bison Smith, that's probably like the best place you could do it is my talk with him.
Yeah,
and so I want to put them back free for everybody, and so that's what I'm doing that process right now. So I was able to have talks with all these people, and you know, kind of like you guys do in the beginning of the show, I would always do a monologue. So there's so many years of me monologuing about being in Japan, you know, whether it's with Chris Hero or Eddie Edwards, or, you know, whatever my time is at that point, but it is like a diary of my life. So there's so many, there's so many times. And I remember recording the intro at a show while Kobashi was wrestling. I wanted to do an intro so you could hear Kobashi in the background wrestling, and I did it from like
that is so cool,
yeah. I did it from like the very top of like the arena, like where it was just me sitting alone, but you could look down. I think it was in, you know, Osaka, how if you remember in Osaka where we would used to wrestle for Noah, there was like a top balcony where nobody would be, where you can kind of be at.
Yes, right.
Yeah, so I remember that's where I did it from. And yeah, those are some of, like, that's how I was able to podcast while in Noah and still wrestle. And so to answer that, Dennis, yeah, it was no sweat. It was just part of the, you know, I always put a lot on my plate. And, you know, what happened to me, guys, was I got signed by WWE at 27. I got fired, you know, shortly thereafter, and I had put all my eggs into WWE. I was just like, well, I guess I'm going to be rich now, and this is, I'm going to be a legend. And it got taken away, and then I was like, oh no, now what? So I never wanted there to be a situation where I say, oh no, now what again? And so podcasting became a part of that, and you know, everything became, my whole life became merchandising, you know, pro wrestling tees, YouTube, documentaries. It all became a part of, if wrestling gets taken away or anything gets taken away, there's always other things for me to do.
And there's a plan B.
Yeah.
Out of all the wrestlers we know, I think you're the most, or you took advantage of all of that. So that's one of the reasons why we wanted to do a podcast. And you take your, you know, you're serious with merchandise and putting yourself out there and stuff. It's just like, especially if you find like a new guy, like, what do I do? What do I do if I want to make a mark in wrestling? And you really did do it the best way. Like, you have a great show. Everybody loves listening to it. You're like one of the funnest wrestlers to watch. Your merchandise is cool. And then, weren't you a part of the creation of Pro Wrestling Tees, or you were one of the first guys, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Me and Ryan, we kind of put it together. And so,
that's right.
Yeah. You know, what's that?
Oh, yeah, I say you're also one of the first guys that I know of doing a podcast, an actual wrestler doing a podcast. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. Before me, there were no wrestlers doing wrestler to wrestler podcasts. Right. It was only, you know, quote unquote media type. So it was nobody in the actual industry on a constant basis doing it. And I feel like there could have been some shame for me doing it, because you know how the business is and everyone's like, oh, what are you doing, brother? You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But I bowled forward through that because I knew it would be successful and I thought it was a cool thing. And then, you know, once Stone Cold and Jericho and Jim Ross started doing it, I feel everyone was like, oh yeah, this is fine. So there was four years of me being like, no one's doing this. Yeah.
It was ballsy to do that. It really was. Hey, because
Colt, we're going to go ahead and crown you the podcast pioneer, because if you've been doing it for that long for all the other guys, you really are the podcast pioneer. And hey, we want to learn from you as well, because you're doing a great job with your podcast.
Well, thank you. Yeah. I've been titled the Podfather before. So
the Podfather.
It's the Podfather. Hey, Colt, by the way, and we'll remind fans again, but where can our Clawcast family see your content? Where can they go?
Yeah. The podcast is Wrestling Anonymous, is wherever you get podcasts from. And then, you know, ColtCabana.com is just a great place to find just me. And that will lead you to everything else, whether it's my YouTube or my merch or my Twitter and Instagram and all that stuff. Yeah.
It might have been an old show, and I could be wrong, but I believe we're listening to one of your shows when it was, yeah, The Art of Wrestling a while ago. And I don't know if it was the fake Hannibal, but you did like a interview. It was one of the funniest things you ever heard.
It's just so easy to listen to. Like before you know it, we're like 30 minutes in, just like
talking over each other and stuff. And whoever did it did such a great Hannibal impression.
Yeah, that's my friend Marty DeRosa, and he has a podcast called Marty and Sarah Love Wrestling. It's him and his girlfriend, and they both love wrestling. And they do a lot of voices and a lot of impressions. And Marty's obsessed with wrestling, obviously, like all of us are. And so, right, if you're obsessed with wrestling to the level, like so deep, you know who Hannibal is and how weird his interviews are and his quirks. And I just think it's fun because I don't think anyone would, like, we've all seen those trailers on YouTube or whatever. We've watched some of them or whatever. But like it to be smart enough to realize that that's something fun enough to play with in a comedic sense is so great that Marty picked up on it. And then of course, you know, I would like that on my show. I think it's so funny. I'd like to showcase Marty on my show playing Hannibal, of course.
It was so good. It was so good. And I literally thought it was Hannibal for the longest time. Talking over each other the whole time. And he would ask a different question as you're answering the last question he asked.
It was really totally good. Disregarding what the other person's saying and just going on about, you know, what he wants to say.
And making sure to get his points in about how he feels about wrestling. Yeah. We get it. You hate Kevin Steen and you think Orange Cassidy is dumb. We get it.
Yeah. Hey, I was going to say, how are you liking AEW and how's everything going for you up there? We love seeing you on weekly television. That's been awesome for us.
Yeah, it's cool. I have no complaint. You know, up until this point, my career was perfect, I think, you know, for what I wanted out of it. And I was, I was just starting to tour New Japan almost on a full-time basis, essentially. Me and Yano had really clicked over there as a tag team.
Yeah, love that. And,
you know, this was presented to me as an option. And I was like, how could I turn this down? I hadn't signed a contract. Last time I signed a contract was with WWE, and I had taken a 50% cut from my independent pay to be a WWE superstar. So I really wasn't up for signing contracts, but AEW was just like, especially the Young Bucks, they were like, dude, this place is so cool. It's easy. We won't mess with you. Do whatever you want. You want to do podcasts? You want to do YouTube? You want to do Twitch? Do Twitch. And that kind of attitude is something I'm all about. And it's cool, man. And it's some of the greatest wrestlers, you know, it's Tony Khan figured out how to put together all these wrestlers in one place. And I'm very grateful. And I love it. And especially during this pandemic that TNT and Tony Khan were able to work with each other to figure out a way to still put the shows up, do it safely. And I'm very grateful. And I look forward to going on the road. I'm a little bit scared. I'm very COVID conscious, but as long as we do it right and we do it correctly and everyone's safe, then I'm all about it.
Are you guys working at the same venue every time since COVID? Has it been like one venue?
Yeah, essentially in Jacksonville, which is nice because it's, you know, the Cons own the Jaguars. And so there's this outside palladium essentially where we're been able to perform, and it's perfect that he owns this outside place in Florida, you know, so there's been a couple of nights where it's very cold or a couple of nights where it's very hot, but for the most part, it's fine to work outside. And, you know, when the whole thing is supposed to be outside, you know, we're able to do that for our job, for a very high profile job. So, it's perfect.
And then, so you're flying out once a week. It's not like, Impact, like, once a month.
No, it's every other week.
Every other week. Oh, that's perfect. Nice. Yeah.
Perfect. You know what? It really is, because obviously someone like me who had flown every single, you know, I would just fly so much. If you took it all away from me, I think it would be very hard, but I definitely needed time to be at home and relax. It was so nice, but I also needed to scratch the itch of like knowing I was a traveling wrestler. And
it was
the perfect mix.
How is it to travel these days? I've been in the travel industry for most of my career, and I haven't flown in almost a year. What's it like these days? How's the procedures?
I would say maybe 4 or 5 months after the whole pandemic, it started going back to seeing the same full airport. Mm-hmm. And luckily there got to a point where all the airlines got together and said, hey, you have to have your mask over your nose and mouth. And so on my flights, everyone's been pretty good about it. You know, we see the viral clips, you know, but I think those are few and far between of the marshals coming on the flight. I flew in March and April, and it was wild to see O'Hare Airport, a dead zone. And the first tapings we did weren't in Florida, they were in Georgia, and I was going to drive those, which is about a 14-hour drive for me. But I said, well, if I drive and I get gas, I'm still going out and I have to interact with the people. I might as well just get on the flight. And, you know, on the flight, there was nobody in the airport and there was like two people on my flight. And so I thought that was safer. And so,
yeah, no, it is safer. It sounds like people didn't want to travel. And so you get a plane to yourself, sit wherever you want.
Yeah. Actually, I felt like Ric Flair with my own plane.
Yeah, that's what you tell yourself. Yeah. And you think of all the credentials you've built up with United through the years, and now I'm here. I got my own plane. You're treating me right.
That's what I told myself. Yeah, for sure.
So when you're flying now, you're not apprehensive anymore. It feels kind of normal.
And I'm vaccinated, but I would wear my mask and I would wipe everything down and put my hoodie over my face and just kind of, you know, pray, to be honest, like pray COVID didn't get into my body.
No, it's really such a crazy time in history. You know, like we were talking to my dad, and he's like, he's never seen anything like this. And it's almost feels normal now, but yeah, it's really not normal. But you guys did something really cool is you provided entertainment during all of this. And that was awesome. MLW did some too. We went to Florida and got a little taste of traveling during the pandemic. And yeah, the same thing. It was just, empty planes, and it's not as crowded as you thought it was. But I was wondering if it's different now, because we haven't, traveled in a while. Is the airport's pretty packed now? Or there?
Yeah, it's picking up.
Okay.
That's good. And Florida looks like it's the place where a lot of people are going. I was just seeing online that, for example, Sammy Hagar did a big concert there a couple of days ago. It had a full venue, and then he's doing some kind of a tour of Florida as well. So it looks like Florida is like becoming one of the places where people are starting to reengage.
Well, I think they've always been the place where people reengage. Well, that's true. Yeah, I'm not going to give too much credit to Florida. But.
I have another question for you. So you've been in Chicago for, I guess, your whole life, a little bit in Michigan. If you had to move to any other state in the United States except for Chicago, where would you go?
Well, I mean, maybe the dream would be on the ranch with you guys in Hawaii, I think.
Oh, we got room for you, man. Come on over.
But I've never been to Hawaii, and I was supposed to go there. I think I told you that story. I was supposed to go there a couple of years ago, but my finger got infected, and I had to go to the hospital instead of doing a 5-day vacation and wrestling in Hawaii, which always made me sad. But I think I envision myself maybe in California. I have family out in California, and the idea of California, like, I love Chicago so much. The way, the colds get cold here. So I just can't vision. It's not a reality that it could not be cold some of the time.
No.
But it's wild that there are places where it isn't cold most of the time.
It's constantly 70, 80 over here. And that really was because I'm a big Christmas guy. I love cold Christmas days and stuff. And then move over here and it's just the same season all the time. And so it's weird seeing Christmas lights up and all that stuff during it. But I don't know. Hey, if you, you said you're frugal, if you ever do come to Kauai, you don't need to get a hotel or anything. Come stay on the VE compound.
You got a guest house with your name on it.
I love it. I will take you up on that.
Cool. Yeah, for the pod god.
Colt, are you in downtown Chicago, or are you out in one of the suburbs?
I live in the city proper.
Oh, you're living the life. That's awesome. It's great down there.
Yeah.
What a wonderful city.
That's why I'm here, baby.
I love it.
And Colt, thank you so much for hopping on our show. We really appreciate it. You're the man. We will probably cross paths with you again soon when things go.
And everybody listening, if you haven't seen Colt Cabana versus Toro Yano, please watch some of those. I just watched Well, when you wrestled them at ROH, and just
yeah,
beautiful. The whole crowd was loving it.
There's one we wrestled also. You know, we wrestled in a tournament in the New Japan Cup, which isn't online. I love that the Ring of Honor one is online, but we wrestled against each other in New Japan Cup, which I think was a little bit better than the Ring of Honor one. And I wish that one would find a home online. I'm going to find how to get it online eventually, but yeah, thanks. Yeah. Me and Yano, that's some of my most favorite stuff. I just feel we were very akin. I feel we have the same wrestling brain, and it makes
the chemistry. You just feel it just blowing off this. It's just
my dad actually became a fan of yours because not many guys work your style right now. It's just that old school storytelling wrestling, you know, it's super fun to watch and great to learn from just, you know, just the formula. Your formula is perfect. But was it, I know it wasn't North Korea. Do you wrestle in China? You wrestled in China with NWA, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I wrestled China with NWA. I also wrestled in Hong Kong. The China one's the one that's kind of online with Nick Aldis. Yeah.
And that crowd was like massive, wasn't it?
Massive, and had no clue what was happening.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. It was almost like going back to Japan like 40 years ago when wrestling, or not 40 years ago, way back before wrestling was actually big.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, that the Dark Side with North Korea just recently came out on Vice, and they talked about how there was 193,000 people there, and Scott Norton's like, but no one knew what was happening. They were just, they had to be there.
Yeah.
I felt the same thing with when I wrestled in China and Hong Kong. It's just like, they knew a spectacle was there, and you know, I guess they wanted to see it, but they hadn't been conditioned to what wrestling was. So they were, they didn't know you were supposed to cheer or boo. And you know, I was trying my hardest to get some kind of reaction, but
I wonder what the formula is for a crowd that's, you know, not conditioned to wrestling. I'm sure there's some kind of formula out there, you know, but you know, it works for a wrestling loving crowd, but yeah, I'm curious to see what would get China, or if anybody would ever go back. Is there any companies that try to go back, or
it's a huge market, you know?
I feel like,
yeah. Yeah. I think there's a group called like MVP or MPV that there's a couple of groups that are out there doing stuff. And I think it's just, but I think those shows are like in front of like, you know, 75 people in like a little warehouse that they've conditioned, you know, they've taught them, or like the uber wrestling fans who know who know what they're looking for.
Right. Yes.
But the big idea is to get even, you know, the masses. And, you know, I wrestled in India for 4 nights too. Wow.
No way.
Yeah. And there was a lot of people there too, but they had no clue what was going on. And it was kind of funny. Like, they had to build the ring out there. So they didn't, you know, they didn't know what a ring was. So essentially it was just like, you know how you said you slept on cinder blocks and plywood? Well, that's what our ring was. It was a 24 by 24 with cinder block. There's no give to this thing. We all did a lot of rolling
that tour.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
But you know, that was, I've always thought of that is how would wrestling do in India? Cause the same thing, like China, just highly condensed, populated place. And I wonder if someone stuck to it and, you know, throwing big shows for a few months, but I don't know.
They've tried. And, you know, like, you know, WWE has like, obviously that's why they, you know, they've tried to crash the that market. Impact has tried to get that market. I think AEW is trying to do some. I'm sure Court will try to, you know, get in there somehow, because I think the TV rights, people are paying for it, but for some reason the masses, when going to a show, just didn't know what was happening. So
maybe it'll pick up in the future. And don't forget, everybody that's listening, for all things Colt Cabana, go to ColtCabana.com. He'll have the links to his podcast, everything. There are some great videos, and this has been entertaining having you on. This has been great.
It's been a lot of fun, man. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, and congratulations on jumping in the podcast game. That's awesome. I think you should do it. Why wouldn't you do a podcast? You should do everything. That's how I feel.
You should. No, exactly. I thought my promos were coming off a little screamy, so I wanted people to get to know who I really am.
There you go. And I look forward to watching the show on Vice once. I know they're doing kind of old replays, but that's cool that you guys got a thing with Vice. And is there any information on when the actual show starts?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure when it's actually going to start.
I know our first taping is July 10th, and so. Right. But after that, they'll be playing new content for on Vice. So
yeah,
it's a big deal for MLW.
Yeah,
That's a very big deal for anybody. That's awesome.
Yeah, we're excited, man. Thank you again, Colt. We appreciate you, man.
Yeah, you're the man. Thank you so much for coming on our show. You're awesome, dude. See you on the road.
I hope to. Thanks, gents.
The Clawcast.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are back. What a great interview. What a super cool guy. We can learn a lot from him as the pod father or the podcast pioneer. What a great interview. Thank you, Colt.
The pod father. That's better, man. That's
I know. What a guy.
He really is so awesome. I'm so glad he took the time to do this. He's a just really down to earth, cool guy. We've run into him a lot in the indie scene and stuff, and always filled with good encouragement. Just easy guy to be around.
Yeah, and you know, we kind of share a dream to have a match again over in Israel, you know, and so he's you know, one of the main guys. We'd love to be a part of that. And so, you know, God willing, we'll see how things go. I'd love to make that happen.
He's a Jewish wrestler that, you know, is loved by all. So he'd be really cool to get over to Tel Aviv or somewhere in Israel. It'd be really cool to get him over there. But
he's absolutely fantastic. I'll tell you what really struck my heart is the fact that he's worked with special needs kids and loves it. You know, I've got a daughter who's severely disabled, and the fact that Colt has a good connection with those kids really warmed my heart and just told me right there. I already knew he was a good guy, but you know, Colt, from me to you, I just want to say thank you for all the work you've done with the special needs kids as a parent. I really appreciate that. That means a lot to me. So thank you.
Legit baby face.
Yeah. My dad's always said this, and that's why me, Ross, and my dad, we all love, kids with special needs in particular, because they're, you know, they're so real. They're not hiding anything. When they love you, they show it. They love you. And it's like everything's is more passionate and deeper with them. And it's my dad said there's been times where he would hug a kid and the kid would just lock on and love him back. My dad would love him back, you know, and he said that they're just real. And
stuff. Yeah. It takes a special kind of person to see that and connect with that, you know, so. Man, bravo to Colt.
God bless you, Colt.
Yeah, yeah. God bless you, Colt, for sure. Yeah. Well, so that was fan. What's that, Marshall?
I was going to say, like we said, ColtCabana.com. If you want to find what he's up to, what he's doing, his merchandise and stuff, he's got great merchandise. He's one of the founding fathers of ProWrestlingTees.com. We also have a store in there. But yeah, go check him out if you haven't already. I'm sure you have if you're a wrestling fan. But
yeah,
if you want to check some out. Of,
and this podcast Anonymous is really cool. I was reading about that earlier, where he's just having people come on, so you could join that. And hey, maybe we could all disguise our voices and come on at some time. Okay, so really quick before we wrap up, we talked about this last time that September 11th is going to be your big show in Dallas. And we still are waiting for some more news to come out. Maybe later this week. Is that correct, guys?
Yeah. We're
more details coming up, but yeah, we know the date. And so that's all we're going off right now, but man, we're excited.
And is the venue in North Richland Hills, is it the same place that you guys have been with MLW, or is it to be announced?
Yeah, most likely it's the NITEC Center in North Richland Hills.
The NITEC. Okay. So we've got that. Marshall, I noticed, and this is important, that your dad is now sending out some informative tweets through your Twitter account. I guess that's okay to let everybody know that.
The Kev Meister's back, everybody. Kind of. He's I've allowed him access to my Twitter so he can go and post and share cool pictures and all that stuff. But I just, my only request was please don't ban my account too. So we'll see.
See how long that lasts.
I originally liked the idea of him using the Iron Clawcast, but if it's controversial, we can't get the Iron Clawcast get banned on Twitter. He is the Twitter bad boy, so that's probably too big of a risk for us to take.
Yeah, I mentioned it to him, and he said, no, I'd just rather do it off yours. And I'm like, okay.
Well, again, if there's any major Kevin Von Erich news, you'll be sure to get it right here at the Iron Clawcast. Speaking of social media, how about we do the social media recap of where everybody can find all things Von Erich. Who wants to take the lead on this discussion, gentlemen?
I'll let the M train get out this one.
The Iron Claw Cast is on all podcast platforms. You can follow us on Twitter, the Iron Claw Cast. Our YouTube channel
at Ross Von Erich, at Marcel Von Erich on Twitter.
Yep.
At Ram Von Erich on Instagram.
And CD Boat.
CDA Boat on Twitter. as well as Instagram as well. And we're also, the Iron Clawcast is on Instagram as well. Although we need to get some more posts on Instagram. We're a little behind on that.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah.
Let's get some content going.
Get some content on there. Okay. Thank you, everybody, so much.
Yeah. Thank you, guys. We appreciate it. It's been a great time again. Thank you to Colt. And on behalf of Ross and Marsha Von Erich, I'm the D-Man. Thank you so much for joining. And as always, never forget, write it down every day. First thing you read in the morning, last thing you read at night, stay clawrific.